Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Recall Midwife. We are three superfans, and each week we watch and discuss an episode. Today we're talking about Series 7, Episode 6. I'm Becky.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jen. A reminder that this week's episode deals with death, grief and loss, mental illness and serious illness. And just a special warning for our fans of Barbara, this will also be a very tough episode for you all, as I'm sure that will be everyone in this group. So if those are topics you would prefer to skip this time, we understand and hope you join us for the next one. Okay. In this week's episode, we meet Terry and Pearl Davidson, newly moved from Northern Ireland to Poplar to run a corner store. The family is just setting up when Terry is involved in a fatal car accident. Pearl is left to take care of everything and is at the end of her pregnancy as well. Barbara pitches in not only as a midwife, but a curate's wife, and after she and Phyllis rescue the family from a fire in the store one night, Barbara brings them back to the parsonage to stay. Pearl goes into labor, and Barbara and Dr. Turner help her deliver twins. Everyone bands together to help the family, and Fred enlists the CDC to repair the store so it can reopen for business. Meanwhile, Val and Lucille are teaching a health class to a group of over 16s, girls, and when one girl's mother finds out and raises serious objections, Val steps in. Val finds out that the mother, Maureen, saw her sister going out with boys as a teenager and then was, quote, ruined by her actions and sent off to a reform school. Maureen never saw her sister again, and Val helps find her, but her fate was much more tragic than Maureen knew. Last, Sister Monica Joan has her first cataract surgery and makes a new and unexpected friend in the process, and Barbara falls gravely ill and is taken to the hospital. Do I have to even say that I was just sobbing so much in this episode? No, obviously I do not.
I knew it was coming, but I just didn't know it was coming this quick. And
I thought it would be in the next series. I thought they'd have some time to be happy. Oh, girls.
I had forgotten. So it just I watched the episode and then I was like, hang on, there's a bit of time left. And then I was like, oh, Barbara.
I know. And wait, just to say, though, because this is definitely a big problem with my version of the episode, but why in the heck is Barbara even sick? What happened? Where did she go that she contracted this illness?
I watched it a couple of times. So as they're helping put the shop back together,
yeah,
she kind of has a little bit of a sniffle,
mm-hmm.
but she's not really, it does creep up on you.
Well, that's kind of the way Tom says it's like, oh, you've been feeling run down for weeks, just rest, you know, because she's like, oh, I just feel so bad. And you can tell the way they styled her in that scene with on when she's under the covers and everything, they take all her makeup off and stuff, and she just looks very pale and washed out. And I'm like okay, but she hasn't really been ill the whole time. And then it's one of those things where it's just maybe under the radar or whatever. I just didn't know if there was a scene I was missing that kind of explained.
Sometimes these things just happen, don't they? Because is it meningitis?
Well, no, they say it's suspected septicemia.
Yeah.
Like sepsis, but I thought it was meningitis. That's where it's come from.
Oh, well,
Because
I
that
get because
is.
maybe next episode they're gonna say
Yeah.
something about like where it really came from.
But my
Because
husband
wait.
was watching it with me. Well, he wasn't watching it with me. He was on his computer next to me while I was watching it. But he said that, you know, when she's all run down and everything, he gets at me like, he's like, you're doing too much. And that's exactly what Tom was saying. And he was like, that's like you. And then I was like, she dies. And he was like, oh, no, that's not like you.
Oh God. Well, okay, so Dr.
No,
Google
so
here.
meningitis is an infection of the lining of the brain. Septicemia is blood poisoning, so it is different.
Oh, yeah, but I
Yeah.
thought it caused that.
I don't know that they're connected that.
They
I don't
ne
know that they're
the
always
Dr. Turner
connected.
never mentions it. He just says it's suspected septicemia.
So my thing says sepsis is also called septicemia. It occurs when chemicals released in the bloodstream to fight an infection
Yeah, but
trigger inflammation throughout the body.
it does cause sepsis, though. Meningitis can be very serious if not treated quickly. It can cause life-threatening blood poisoning and sepsis and result in permanent damage to the brain or nerves. That's how people lose their
Oh,
legs and stuff. That's how I knew about it.
so you think she the meningitis caused septicemia,
Yes.
but we don't know yet that she has
No, but my
meningitis.
point being, usually other. Do you remember we were at uni and in the second year
I
you'd gone
do
back there?
remember
But do you
we
remember someone we knew who lived on our road got really bad septicemia because he had a cut and it had got infected and he was in hospital really poorly?
I don't remember that name.
Well, I wasn't there, so I definitely
So
don't
my point being,
remember
there's
it.
not been a scene where she's got a cut or anything. She's like ill from it, so I think it is meningitis. Anyway, we'll
Okay.
find out.
Well, next week we'll find out, yeah. But she's obviously really bad off when. Anyway, we'll get there. I don't know if we want to start there, right?
Oh, I don't even want to talk about it. It just makes me so sad.
Should we start with the Davidson? I didn't warm to the Davidsons.
Well, we didn't have much time to warm to him, did we?
No, not
Although
Terry.
look at them establishing that he's a terrible driver, like literally in the first 10 seconds that he's on the screen, because he nearly runs over that mother and daughter, Maureen and her daughter, that are gonna be in the episode later. And then he even like almost bashes into, I wanna say maybe Winifred or something like that. Like there's
Well,
another
he just splashed him, Jenny, and he splashed him. That's what really
Well,
annoyed me about.
he just splashed him, but he just was clearly like just driving all over the shop, like not really paying attention. Like, you know, he just didn't have a very like quote good driving vibe when we met him.
Speaking
And
about his
then
driving, just before we actually go into the whole thing, obviously she's heavily pregnant and smoking whilst he's driving as well, which made me laugh.
right. Love
But
that, yeah.
what really got me about the actual, so he died in a crash. But did my in that scene, there was no chance in this world he had enough speed up to get into a bad crash.
No,
But he wouldn't have
exactly.
had his seatbelt on, so he would have probably gone through the windscreen.
Oh my goodness. Sorry.
Oh, that's really dark.
Yeah, but even then, he was only doing about 20. I just think normally I'm with Heidi Thomas on every single
Oh,
step of the way here with
no,
accuracy,
I
but
will say, like,
car
you need.
safety, that car will have just crumpled.
Well, you'd also be surprised. Like, I did a
True.
defensive driving thing for work, and you do not have to be like you can have a really bad, 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 even fatal accident at a relatively low speed. I'll just say that.
Well,
And
I'll
Bex
take
is
it
right.
back
Like
then.
without the seatbelt, like you forget how many people died in car accidents before there were like seatbelt laws and stuff. And yeah, he probably. Oh God, that's a terrible image though, Bex. Thinking about him
Sorry,
going through the
sorry.
windscreen like that. Ooh,
This is a lovely start to this podcast,
Well,
guys.
anyways,
I was surprised that Dr. Turner wasn't involved. Dr. Turner pops up at all medical
Yeah.
situations, obviously,
Yeah.
because he's the main
He
doctor in
was
the show.
just.
But I'm surprised that he wasn't involved at the scene.
Same.
Well, they really didn't even show anything like the way they cut it, that he was eating chips like when he died, which, by the way, I mean, nobody wants to be in a car accident, but I mean, eating chips right before you go is not the worst thing in the world.
Well, that's why I went though.
And.
If it had just
Keep
had
your
some
eyes
patience.
on the road. Keep your
You
eyes
know what
on the
really annoys me?
road.
Whenever, so my husband goes and gets McDonald's for us and stuff sometimes, and he always eats loads of the chips on the way home. And then when he comes
Oh,
here,
yeah.
he's there dividing them into half. I'm like, nah, mate.
Well, I have to say, like, I always order extra chips or extra like French fries for the drive, because you've just got to have like a buffer zone there. And I'm usually the ones going
Well,
getting them,
he
so I
should
always
do
make sure I
that,
have.
but no, he's there taking part of mine.
Yeah. Well, you got to order extra for the drive. And then actually, my brother-in-law's family told us something that they started doing, which I'm like, oh my God, this is the most genius thing in the world. And I may have said this on the podcast before, so stop me if I have. But anyways, there's a donut place near their house, not that near, like 20 minutes away. But you have to get there really, really early to get the donuts. Otherwise, they sell out so fast. So they have a thing where you have to get all the donuts you want to eat, but then you also get to get car donuts, which are the donuts you eat in the car on your way back to the house before you eat like the regular donuts. And And so I'm now like a firm believer that you have to have like food and then like car food. But again, you should never be so distracted by your car food that you get into an accident.
No.
You have to drive safe. You have to drive safe, people.
So we probably should talk about, we've actually done basically the whole storyline apart from the end bit. So let's talk about who they are. So it's Terry Davidson. He's from Northern Ireland with his wife, Pearl. They've got two kids. What were their kids? Hazel and Alistair.
Oh, right.
And they move into it. I like the way you call it, a corner store. A corner shop. I've never heard of a corner store. I love it. It's the same thing, essentially. But they have
this news agent.
You are, sorry? News agent. Yeah. Yeah, but well, I still call it a corner shop.
Well, in my mind, I was going to write convenience store. And then I was like, I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, what would be the best, like, universal descriptor? So I went with corner store. But yeah.
My first job was in a news agent's.
I didn't know if it'd be considered a news agent or an off license, but then I think off license only sells out. Well, not only, but to be an off license, you have to also sell alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think this was a news agent as someone from the trade.
Did you have to get on death the clock to do papers?
Yeah, I had one of my, well, I convinced my mum to let me have this job. So I would start work at 6 o'clock was it 6 or 7 on a Sunday? It must have been
6 a.m.
Yeah. And my mum, bless her, got up and dropped me every morning. So we had to put up the papers. But we would have people queuing, like old people queuing to get their papers.
But also, wouldn't you have like to give to the paper boys, paper girls and boys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to put the papers, Sunday papers together. Then you had to put them up for the paper boys to take them out. And I convinced my mum that because it was the perfect shift to do because I could still concentrate on my studies, but then I was up so early I literally had a nap every Sunday afternoon.
Why did you want to do this job, Bex?
Just because I wanted a job. I wanted to earn some money.
To be fair, I worked at a chipper. You know they were saying about chipper. We call it a chip shop.
Yeah, I've never heard it called a chipper.
I think it must be a Northern Irish thing. We say chippy.
Chippy. Yeah.
Also, I did think some of our listeners might think we're talking about chips. They might think we're talking about crisps.
Oh. This is like this is a huge
probably
part
not.
Of the...
Like, is it not such a thing that's just a crisp shop? Do you know what I mean?
No.
Yeah. Well, also, if everyone watched the episode in advance of this, they would have seen, like, what the food was that he was eating. So hopefully people will know. Yeah.
So anyway, they bought an all stocked up, ready-to-go newsagent, and they meet Fred, first of all. Literally, they've just fresh got out of the car there, and then that second. Mm-hmm. And they meet Fred, and he's all like, oh, hello. And he's like, is that an Irish accent? And he's like, Northern Irish, is that a problem? Straight away.
Yeah, he was like really ready to get into it. I was like, sir,
please
don't. I think
that's
obviously
to represent the fact that there are problems, or there were problems at that time in Northern Ireland.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, their mindset is just to be on the defensive.
Yeah, well, but also the fact that kids were like, which bit's Catholic, which bit's, you know, Protestant, and they were like, no, it's not like that in London.
Everyone lives together. Sorry, I said that really weird.
It's like you were in a, like, in a trance. Everyone lives together.
It's like the beginning of an M. Night Shyamalan movie where, like, someone turns up and they're like, what's going on here? And then there's, like, a woman comes out of the corner and she's like, everyone lives together. And it's like, da-da-da-da-da.
So anyway, Terry's in one scene. Well, he's in two scenes. He's in one scene when they first drive up and he's wetting everyone on the road. Then they get there speaking to Fred, and then he's in the scene where he's in his car eating chips, and then he dies basically.
Yeah, Terry is literally in this for 30 seconds. We've already talked about Terry like way, way, way too much. But
although one more thing about Terry, I do recognize the actor because he played someone in Hollyoaks. Do you remember that?
Oh,
I did watch Hollyoaks, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, he was in it. Anyway, he was in that. So,
okay.
The wife, Pearl, and the two kids go into the house or into the flat, and they're just basically waiting for him because they're starving for the food. And then instead of him, they're like, where is he? He's been in over an hour. And then Tom Herriwood turns up with a policeman.
Which, by the way, if you've seen Tom, you know that's always going to be bad news. Sorry. Nothing against Tom, but ooh.
Speaking of Tom, just really quick, the first scene with him and Barbara really annoyed me. Him just watching her iron.
Yeah, just this look on his face of like, oh, look at her iron.
Yeah, but also the way he was like, you don't have to do that whilst I watch you. Well, you do it then, mate. He's like, you're doing too much. He says, watching her do it.
Oh, well, that's such a classic guy thing, right?
So this is later on in the episode where Barbara's all flustered because she says that when they lived in Birmingham, she obviously wasn't working, so she had all the time to do the housework. And she comments about the size of the ironing pile. And he says, leave them. I never used to iron my shirts before. There's no offer to iron the shirts himself. It's just, let us just not iron them.
Girls, this is such a classic, like, Dr. Turner, where he's like, Sheila, you don't have to make us bacon and eggs and toast and hash browns and everything, a full English. I don't need all that. Just make me toast and jam and a coffee and an orange juice. Like, keep
and
it
clean
simple.
Up after us. Clean up after us as well.
He's like, you're doing too much. He's like, just make me a regular breakfast, like, while I sit here and read the paper and do
just
nothing.
Just plan all the meals and I won't do anything. I'll just accept them.
Although, you know what's so funny? So, just quick sidebar. My mom, no dirt, loves this podcast and she loves Call the Midwife so much. She's like one of our OG super fans.
We love your mom.
Yeah, we love our mom. And so, anyway, so we were chatting about this and she was like, I just love you girls. She's like, the way that you guys talk about all these things, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, but then she's like, oh, and that scene where Dr. Turner and Fred are like saying these things to like Violet and Sheila. And she's like, you know, I know we love them, but she's like, but the thing is, she's like, that is just such a typical 1950s, 1960s husband. Like, you would not believe, you know, and then she just, and I'm like, okay, mom, I'm like, I know it's typical. Like, I know it's like period perfect, but like, it's still annoying as hell. And it just drives us all crazy.
I'm going to stand, it's also typical, like, 1920, I was going to say 1920s, it's not the 1920s. So it's typical of 2020s. Am I right, ladies? Am I right? Listeners, am I right?
Say it with me. So, yeah. But Fred is very sweet to the family. Fred is- he really does show up for them. So in all fairness, and he does say to the wife, because he comes up to her, like, literally as they're going to the funeral. Yeah. And he's like, you know, listen, I didn't know if I had known I would want to attend. Like, is there anybody here that you want to come with you? And she was like, no, we don't have anybody here. And he's like, well, let me just run home and change. Like, where is it? I'll meet you there so I can, like, you know, like, grieve with you guys. And she's like, no, it's family only. And he's like, well, listen, I've literally been where you are. Please let me know if there's anything I can do. And then she's like, well, okay, not really. But because she's very proud. Woman.
Yeah, she's very proud, but also I kind of feel like she feels like she is on her own.
Absolutely.
I think she probably just thinks those words are empty. She's feeling very low. She's right, like, already at the end of a very, like, it's not like carrying twins is going to be easy. I know they don't know it's twins, but it's not going to be easy, is it?
No. Oh, I didn't even realize she was pregnant until she showed up at Dr. Turner's and he was like, oh, how far along are you? And I was like, wait, excuse me, what? Like,
oh, I saw a massive bump in the car while she was there smoking.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I just didn't. I didn't clock the bump. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, I can see how in her shoes you'd be like, oh, this is just somebody being nice, basically, which I definitely would probably think that too. But he wasn't just being nice. He was being really genuine. And then
put his money where his mouth was later. But we'll talk about that in a minute. So yeah. Dr. Turner gets a midwife to come around to her because she's so overwhelmed. She's got a lot of stuff to do. And who does she get as a midwife?
Barbara, the best.
The best. I love her.
Yeah.
And Barbara's got new hair.
She does.
Yeah. It's her, like, come back to popular hair. It's like longer.
I'm a married woman now.
Yeah. It's still like so bouffanty. I love it.
Oh, do you know what else I love? Barbara and Nurse Crane going to a Spanish guitar recital.
Oh, they're just like such cute gal pals.
No. I do love, and I love that for, it's going to be so short lived, but I love that for Nurse Crane.
Oh, you can tell she's just like has a new, like, spring in her step now.
But they're like
back.
Proper equal pals. Like, Barbara was like, oh, and he was there looking at you. She was like, wasn't looking at me, and I that was off. So they're coming back from the Spanish guitar recital and they see smoke
coming from the shop. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Nurse, can I just say, out of those two, I was very shocked that it was Nurse Crane who sprang into action.
Really? Because Phyllis is such a badass.
Not that I didn't think Phyllis would be a badass, but Barbara's a badass as well. You saw how she was with that spider in South Africa. Barbara is very much a badass too.
Yeah, but
without being
ageist,
she is the younger one. I just thought she'd be the one sprinting up the stairs, sorting it all out.
Well, but in a way, didn't you think it almost made so much more sense that, like, they both were like, oh no, and then Phyllis first, before Barbara had a chance, not because Barbara wasn't good enough, but just because Phyllis is just, like, such, like, a, you know,
go-getter,
like, kick-ass, take names kind of a gal. She was like, okay, she's like, you run and call the fire brigade, like, I'm in a blah, and then you know, and then she basically found a brick and, like, put it through the window, like, opened the door, like, started running up to the I mean, I think she just took control of the situation a little bit more than Barbara, like, just a bit faster, but not that both
it's
of them.
Do you know why it is?
Building.
It's because she's a scout leader.
Yeah. Exactly. She knows what's what. Yep. True.
But the fire was caused by a bloody cigarette.
I know, which, I'm sorry, that lady needs to quit smoking for a lot of reasons. Like, Man,
I think she has now, hasn't she? Do you reckon?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Gee whiz, if like, oh my god, if like traumatizing your whole family by almost burning down your only source of income wasn't enough, then I don't know what is. But yeah, quit smoking, please, ma'am.
So Phyllis goes up and actually saves them, wakes them. Basically, she's asleep on the sofa, and Alistair and Hazel are just like, you know, hanging around, but they don't hear anything about a fire. They don't understand what's going on. They're just scared that someone's really aggressively banging on their door, like you would be, to be fair.
And Phyllis then had to shout like fire, 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 because they didn't realize like that it was, you know.
And I don't even think I would have thought to shout fire, fire, fire. I'd just be like, open the door.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, no, go away.
And then you would have been like, no, I'm banging on your door because there's a terrible fire. Please come out. Let's just be real. Like, all three of us would have been like, I'll be the one to go call the fire department. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I think I'd be all there trying to go up a burning building.
Oh, I'm not sure I would volunteer for burning building duty.
I think you've got to ring the fire brigade. You need to ring the fire brigade first.
You do have to ring the fire brigade first. Absolutely.
Yeah, but if there's two of us, you know.
Okay, so then I'll just say you can run into the burning building and I'll go.
Any future situation, Alex, you go in.
Now, the problem at the moment is I'm not very good at running. I'm not very good at climbing stairs.
You'll have to do it.
I'll tell you what, if it was burning as much as it was burning when Phyllis went in, I could see myself going in there, because like she had a path, like though it was super super smoky, she had a path to get to the back of the shop where you like go upstairs to the family where it was like not like flames, you know what I'm saying? So I could see myself being like, all right, you know what, I can actually maybe navigate this, again assuming I am able, am ever in the situation and have the bravery to like even think about it for 5 seconds. But yeah, it was when they were coming down that was more scary.
I was Barbara down the bottom, obviously I'd go and ring the fire brigade, but then I'd like, oh, this is a really stupid thing I was going to say, but I'd try and get a bit of brick and throw it to the window at the top, trying to just get their attention to come down.
Well, but the thing is, I thought you were going to say, because Phyllis tried to have them, like she said, we're going to hurl the children out the window.
Yeah.
But then the mom was like, there's only 6 inches between us and the next building, so like you can't do that. And she was like, oh crap.
We've discussed this before in this podcast about how I'm absolutely look at the worst situation in things and have like worst case scenario kind of things, crisis situations. But I've already got it planned now that if there's ever a fire in our house, we can get onto our garage roof from two routes. So
why wouldn't you go up the front?
It might be a fire, it might be blocked.
Blocked.
So I'm throwing my daughter out the window into the garage, and or my husband's going to go out there and I'm going to throw her on him. We've already had this big discussion.
Because if the fire is downstairs and you're trapped upstairs.
Yeah.
Oh.
We've got loads of routes out. I've already thought about it loads.
Oh, we'll see. I haven't really thought about
it. Because I'm a normal person.
But our house is a ranch style house, so we could go out one of three doors. And then obviously all of our windows are like not that far. So we would hurl ourselves out of like a ground floor window, which I mean wouldn't be nice, but
I have to say, I think nobody knows how they're going to react until you're in that situation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. But and God willing, none of us ever will be, so.
Has anyone actually ever rung, like, an ambulance or, a like, by a...
I have, multiple times. It's really terrible, but, yeah, when you got to do it, you got to do it. But anyways, so they survive the fire. They go to the parsonage. Barbara is there with, like, soot on her face and everything. And Tom's like, I was so worried about you. And she's like, well, don't be worried about me. Worry about the fact that I just brought this family home. And then literally Pearl is like, oh, by the way, my water just broke. And I'm going to give birth, like, literally on your sofa. And she's like, okay, here we go. So then she goes.
Can I just tell the story about the time I rang the ambulance was because I was walking back from the shops and I happened upon, I think he was drunk and he collapsed on the pavement but into the road.
Mm-hmm.
So all the traffic had stopped. There's always a nurse around. Aww. I have to say, if ever there's a medical emergency, there's always a nurse. Anyway, I was on to the ambulance and someone had come out of the house. There were loads of us stood around helping. So I was talking to them and I was telling them what the ambulance, because they obviously give you instructions of what to do. And somebody who had stopped in a car was a first aider and was so outraged by what the ambulance was telling us to do that he stormed off.
Wait, what? Why was he so outraged? What was the misinformation?
Well, she was telling us to put him in, like, check his breathing, and he was breathing fine, but it was like, check that his tongue's not falling down the back of his throat, check he's breathing, put him in the recovery position.
Okay.
And he was just outraged that we were going to move him. That he got in his car and he left.
So wait, a nurse was telling you to do something, and then a paramedic was telling you to do something different?
The ambulance was telling us, but somebody was a first aider through
What's a first aider?
So you know,
he's just first aid at work.
Oh, so not a medical professional. Literally not just somebody who has the box of Band-Aids in their desk at work, and they were so offended that something they saw on a TV show that they thought they knew better than people who were actually medical professionals. Oh, my
God. Was,
by the way, this first aider a man?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes.
Can I tell you two about the time at Halloween? This Halloween, we all went out trick-or-treating. And this Halloween was weirdly happened on the high school's holidays. It was all around then. So all the high schoolers were all out doing trick-or-treating. Anyway, there was these like group of like, I don't know, they were like 14, about 7 14-year-old lads. And one of them was absolutely passed out on our route. I'm here with about 12 6-year-olds walking along with some load of the mum doing trick-or-treating. Anyway, this kid's passed out and I'm like, boys, what's going on? Are you all right? And they were like, yes, we don't know. And I was like, right. I was like,
I started laughing, but I shouldn't have laughed because I didn't know. Was it a legitimate like medical emergency, or was he just
he was drunk, Jeff.
Oh, okay. So I was like, okay, that's what I thought.
Anything?
So
I was like, has he taken anything, or have he drunk cider or something? And the lads were like, we've drunk something. I was like, right, one of you give me his phone or give me your phone and let's ring his mum. So they were like, okay, can anyone get into his phone? They were like, yeah. So I rang his mum. I said, it'll come better from me than like these boys. Yeah. So we rang his mum. I rang this poor woman. I was like, hiya, are you Callum's mum? And she was like, yeah. I was like, don't worry, I don't actually know him, but I'm on the car park at the library. he's passed out drunk. I'm really sorry to tell you this. I've just happened upon him. Can you come and pick him up? She was like, oh my God. And I was like, are any of you his brothers or anything? And they all literally scarpered and left me in another room with him.
They were like, we don't even know who he is.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they left him. And then I caught up with the trick-or-treaters. My daughter went off with the others trick-or-treating. And then they caught up, but yeah.
Did you wait until the mom got there?
Yeah, of course I did. I'm not going to leave him there. He was literally up the road. It's about a 30-second thing.
Can you imagine if you just like hung the phone up and then just like threw it on his like lifeless body and we're like, okay, well anyway, your mom will be here in 5 minutes. Bye. And like
he was just like, oh, and I was like, he's not gonna be drinking again for a while. We were like, literally, the kids were like stepping over him. And I was like, what's happening? Into the front.
Oh,
anyway, sorry, back to it. Okay. She has a little girl, she gives birth.
Yeah. Wait, I need to talk about the fact that she's ruined Barbara's mattress.
Oh, Barbara doesn't care. That mattress was already 45 years old that they got in like third hand from five other parsonages, like curate's wives.
I love the fact you keep saying parsonage. I love it. I will say.
Well, wait, what's
that one thing
called?
I do admire about Tom is the fact that he didn't care that she brought those people back. If anything, it was lovely. Whereas my husband, what are these people? I'm not giving up my bed.
No, he knows. They're in it. They're in it. 100%. They know. But yeah, he did have a good attitude.
So this poor Pearl, she gives birth to a little girl after basically losing the house in a fire and everything's awful. And then Barbara's like, I know you're really tired and smoking inhalation's been awful and you lost your husband and your livelihood and your house, but you're having another baby right now.
And by the way, get ready, because you thought you were tired. You're not even going to begin to know what the word tired means by the time this is done. So
if someone told me that after the first baby, I'd be like, nah, I'm not. No, I am not.
Well, that would be one of those moments where it's like, I'm not having another baby. Don't you even think I'm having another. I gave birth to one. I signed up for one. That's all I want. That's all I need. That's all
I will say though. So Terry thought it was a boy and she was like, oh, Terry was wrong again or something. It was really weird the way she said it, like Terry was wrong again. Men. And then when the second one came, which she gave birth, your body will know what to do. Yeah, it might do, but I'm knackered, mate.
I'd probably have said to her, like, oh my God, how are you going to cope with twins?
One baby is getting assigned to Alistair and one baby is getting assigned to Hazel. And then that's going to be their little buddy for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Terry was right. He did have a boy because Terry Jr. was second. And then, yeah, so she had this baby, another baby, and they were all like, oh, aren't they beautiful and everything. I don't know how she managed to even have a bit of shred of happiness there, because I had just been sobbing and wailing with tiredness, like, what's just happened? God. Like, oh my goodness, bless her.
Yeah.
And then
talk about a woman who's been through the ringer. I mean, can you imagine this? Now, I thought it was stressful the last few months when, like, we moved house, moved job, like all this other stuff like that. That was really hard. This woman has literally moved to a different country, started a new business, lost her husband.
With two kids as well. It's not like she's just gone on her own.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, lost her husband and now has two new babies and that is like six major life changes all at once. And you're really only ever advised to do one, maximum two at the most, because they're so incredibly painful and stressful. Oh my God. God bless that woman. Like,
and also she caused it. She caused, not his death, but she caused the fire as well. So she's got the guilt and like horrificness of that.
Yeah, but let's not
and have insurance
her. Now. Yeah. The no insurance thing, no insurance. That was
like, oh my God.
Oh, well, the thing is, I'm like, you should have had insurance from day one. Like, that's the first thing you buy. Like, when you buy a car or a house, you have to buy insurance with it. Like, it's not like it's
all
like,
right,
oh, wait
this
and
is
see.
Hindsight. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you're the one who said she was the one who caused her own house to her fire to burn down.
I just
so
because she'll have the guilt from it. I didn't mean, oh, she caused it, the stupid cow. I mean, she caused it, so she's got the guilt of that as well. Like, she'll probably feel really horrific about the fact that she's caused that fire.
Well,
nearly
it was
killed
an
the
accident. It was an accident. What
it
wasn't an accident was not buying insurance. Buy insurance.
Yeah, but Terry probably dealt with that stuff and she thought,
well,
he sorted it.
Yeah, and look at what Terrence did. There we go. he was as flippant with the insurance as he was with his driving, and look how it ended up. Okay,
I'm going to talk about the CDC because we've not had a lot of CDC action.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's how Violet and Fred got together. Do you think she just used the CDC just to get with Fred and then, like,
yeah,
you know, yeah, jack it off? And then she was like, nah, I can't be bothered anymore now, I've got a husband. The fellas in the CDC came through to decorate it beautifully, make it all perfect again, which was amazing. I do have to say, well done them.
Well, they completely gutted it and then built it back from nothing. So, yeah. They even, like, restocked it from what it looked like.
Yeah. And Alistair and Hazel were having kids. I did love that scene with Nurse Crane saying the kid without scruples was taking the socks off his own sister. She was going to school without her socks.
That was so cute. That was so cute. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, they basically helped set up this family, like, in a really, really good way. They kind of got them, like, all the baby clothes they needed, all the kids' clothes they needed. Like, you know, obviously not everything. But then they, like, rebuilt the store so that the family could be all back together, because the kids had to go into, like, temporary foster care. And it basically just,
like,
put them
on
back on their feet.
Yeah, we're going to take you home. And then they had the amazing Rain Until September song on.
Well, wait, now, no spoilers, but is this the news agents that Fred and Violet by, like, later down
the
road?
Yes.
There we go. Also, wait a minute, you guys, like, didn't you love the amazing, I don't know what you call them, but like the ads they put on the wall outside across from the news agents? Did you guys clock those?
I did.
That
I
was so
it.
Good.
They were great.
Yeah, they were like proper vintage ad specs that they would have, you know.
Yeah.
No, I was just gonna say they were really cool. Like, one was for like borough development, one was for like, you know, if you want to get a license or something like that for your cars. I didn't know if they meant like a license plate or a driver's license, but anyways, they were just like such cool, like proper vintage ads. It was just,
well, neat. I watched it. My husband was watching it next to me, and obviously he's a graphic designer, so he was absolutely loving that part.
Oh yeah. No, it's awesome. I just love those little details. Like, even like Barbara, when she was ironing, like her little vintage, like, I mean, not vintage for her, but like, you know, the iron that she had and everything. I just, oh my God, I just love those little details.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so everything, I mean, look, it was a terrible situation they were in, but ultimately, like, it worked out as best it could. And like, that was nice for the family.
Yeah. And hopefully it'll all work out for them in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which storyline are we doing next? Are we doing Mrs. Walker?
So Lucille and Val have been working at the youth club, covering, as Val put it, the three Ps: puberty, period, and pongs.
And then personal Lucille hygiene. Gives her a look and she's like, personal hygiene. Yeah.
So it's a health and I think their mistake was calling it a health and relationships class. Should have just called it a class.
A health class?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
What do they call it now? PSC. What does that stand for? Personal and social education.
You've just answered it yourself, because I couldn't remember it now.
Oh, God. We just called it sex ed when we were growing up. I don't know what it's called now, but yeah.
Fun fact for listeners, I fainted every single time they showed a uterus on screen. I'm not even kidding. Every single time. I remember doing it in year 7. I did it in year...
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
9. I did it in year 11. I fainted every single time a womb was shown. Which is a miracle. I've had a baby.
Well, wait. You fainted when they showed a picture, or when they just showed a drawing?
A picture, a drawing, like a drawing.
Even a drawing would make you faint?
Yes, the whole thing makes me feel really funny. I can't even think about it right now.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Because the drawing is so benign. It's like, it doesn't even look like a real anything. It just,
I'm just very funny about that. And also, maybe as funny as Lucille is against tampons.
Oh my God, Lucille.
But Lucille is only against tampons for unmarried girls.
Yeah, but I think she's just from a very religious background. Her mum would very much disapprove. I think it's not actually very, what's the word? I don't think it's typical of Lucille. I think they're just trying to portray this to be that kind of the ideals of the time. That's what people thought around that time. Because I don't think Lucille's character would think like that. She's a trained nurse. Do you know what I mean?
You say that, but like Lucille is a very, very conservative person. Like when she starts dating Cyril, like her conservative side like really comes out. And I think
and it's conservative,
actually,
but
like,
she's also medical.
Well, she's medical, but the thing is, if she's a true medical professional, then she'll like understand that there's absolutely nothing wrong or sexual, by the way, with using a tampon. And she was like really weirded out by it. She's like, oh
that's why really- I think it was to show the signs of the times. That's what I'm saying. I think that's because people had that weird viewpoint then.
Yeah.
Thank goodness you don't have to wear one of those belts with pads anymore.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm just, yikes. I'm just so grateful. So grateful. I just loved when Val was like pushing back on her too. I thought that was very good. Anyway.
So Lucille just feels really uncomfortable with the whole situation. She feels uncomfortable with the tampons. It's very much Val that's leading the class.
Yeah.
There was also a bit where, so Val's very much leading and making Lucille do stuff like telling her to get them to name each part. I could not name each part. Could you?
No, definitely not. In fact, the diagram she had really confused me. I was like, wait a minute, there's stuff on there that I don't really know what it is.
Do you know, and how many times have I seen a diagram of a womb and someone was telling me that they had a heart-shaped womb? And I was like, oh, what shape's it supposed to be? And I know that. Well, I couldn't describe it to you now. But I was like, oh, I don't know what shape it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Well, we know how I feel about it after, faint all the time.
Well, I'll say this though. I really did rate this that Val said, because she made the comment that, you know, a lot of these young girls just really don't know what their body is all about, and they don't know how it works, and they don't know what it does, and they don't know, you know, a lot of the kind of the real basics about their own anatomy. And I just thought, deeply relatable. I mean, I think we've all, you know, over the course of our lives now, especially as, you know, the age that we're at and everything, we really understand how a lot of it works, if not all of it. But still, it's just such a mystery for so long. And like, especially
it's still a bit of a mystery for me.
Yeah. Well, and you've had, you know, you've kind of gone through everything, you know, you can kind of go through. I mean, it's just, oh my gosh. I mean, it's and especially when you're that young, you know what I mean? Like the girl's comment about, my sister told me that if you go to the bathroom right after you have sex, that you won't get you won't have a baby. And Val was like, well, no, that's wrong. Like, see how they're two totally separate, you know, things here. And she was like, oh no, you know what I mean? And it was just like, yeah, of course you wouldn't have any clue, you know what I mean? It's just
speaking of age, how old do we think Elizabeth Walker is?
17.
Do you?
She's got to be over 16.
Oh really? I thought she's about 15.
Wait, it was 6. Oh, because she's
But even then, I thought it was mental that outside Windmore Academy, which is obviously where she goes, it looked really posh. That's where she got splashed, yeah. But a mum was holding her hand, and I thought, ooh.
Well, her mom really infantilizes her a lot. I think she's 16 too, probably.
I can't even hold my 10-year-old niece's hand now.
She won't let you?
Oh, it's cringe.
Mine has started, Bob's has started saying, come on. When I say stuff to her, like, you're not doing that, come on. I'm like, don't you dare say that to me, young lady. She will hold my hand, though, occasionally.
Oh,
I know. Yeah. When we met up for the weekend and she held my hand, and I was like, oh, it's so lovely.
Oh. Well, they still like hug you and stuff like that. Hug you and kiss you.
So my nephew will. I, to be honest, I just think my niece just isn't. She's a bit like Alex. She's just not a huggy person.
Oh god.
Yeah.
So I'll say like she'll sometimes she will because she'll be like she'll be and then sometimes they say give me a hug and she just literally like leans her shoulder into me.
Oh Bob's god. Bob's a big hugger, but she's six, so I'm sure that will.
But then my nephew, who's 13, like every time I leave, will give me a hug and a kiss.
Well, I will say my nephew's only 2.5, and one of them is more huggy than the other one, just naturally. But I don't know. Like, I believe in body autonomy, but I just don't think I'm ever just going to stop making them hug me or like taking, you know, like I'm just going
to
be like,
yeah, but also, to be fair, they're part of your family. They can't not be huggers. Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, we're just like such a hug-based family.
I do feel you, Jim, because I do feel as if I know she doesn't like to hug, but I still make her try and do it.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, just give me a squeeze. And then I sometimes will joke with them, like when we're playing, I'm like, oh, if you pass by me, you have to pay the hug tax. And then, like, you know, I'll obviously squeeze them and everything.
Mine's
and they're
the
just kind of like, what is going on?
She hates me just trying to kiss her cheeks all the time. Like, mama, mama, mama. Like, she's just trying to kiss her cheeks because her cheeks are just so kissable. They have been since she was a tiny baby, but she's not into that now. She's just like,
oh,
no, I mean, my body. And I'm like, excuse me, I grew it, mate. Get it.
You're like, I own that body. I paid for that body.
It's a bit weird.
Anyway, back to Elizabeth. Elizabeth has faked her mum's signature so that she can come along. But then when Mrs. Walker comes, so she's late leaving class one day, and Mrs. Walker, what's Mrs. Walker's name?
Maureen's
been waiting for her. She's got worried, so she comes in. She finds one of the diagrams where someone's basically like pointed to where the vagina is, and then is really outraged. And I just thought, it's Lucille who feels really uncomfortable about this, and she's the one who Maureen makes the complaint about.
I love the way her face acted. This was amazing. Although I did think it was a bit weird. Like, literally, it was just a diagram, which is very offensive to me because I faint, but it was just a diagram of the female. I thought it would be just a bit more believable if there was just a big penis there. But
well, I will say I didn't think anything of it, but I like, it's like, are boys getting this class too? Like, I could understand doing a boys class and a girls class like separated, but like, I hope the girls are kind of understanding what boys have going on so they understand what the anatomy is, because I feel like boys, not like in a deep way maybe, but
that'll be next
like,
week's Jen, that'll be next week's.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god. I'm
so
like,
they get to this root of the problem is that basically Maureen Walker had a sister called Lily, and she obviously had history of being promiscuous, we'll say, because they don't really explain it. They just said she was like a dirty sewer rat or something. It was all very weirdly colloquialism, wasn't it? It was just weird.
Well, the way she told the story, it was like she basically banged every guy she went to school with, you know. But I mean, I don't think it was really even that. Probably it was probably
but that's
not
the point. I feel like it was from her mum. Yeah, it was from her mum, and it was kind of relayed to her to never do anything. So I feel like maybe it's exaggerated or whatever. But when Val and Lucille were talking about the sister to Elizabeth, she just sang like a canary, being like, oh, you know, Aunt Lily was my mum's sister. I don't know anything about it, but she doesn't want me to be like her. So then they go round to see Maureen and Elizabeth because of the complaint. And so then anyway, carries on. The classes are still going on, and Mrs. Walker basically comes in and tries to protest, being like, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And Val marches her out. Oh, I did like that, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Oh, Val got very serious. She wasn't taking any guff from this woman. Absolutely.
He literally manhandled her, or Maureen handled her. And she was like, what happened to your sister? If I don't understand, I can't help. She tells her that she went to Lark Hill, which I think Lark Hill Estate was on the bill years ago. Do you remember, Bet?
I do remember.
Really?
And do you know what? My mum recently started watching back episodes of The Bill. And I was like, how long is this going to take you? There's so many episodes of it.
I'm sure the Larkhill estate was where the police cars couldn't go. So anyway, that's by the bank.
So it's a real place?
No. It was just a fictional place. Sunhill was the place in the bill, and Larkhill estate was where they couldn't go. It's absolutely ridiculous tangent that did not need more than one sentence. I do apologise. But she was saying she was at Larkhill, a reform school, and Val was like, no, if it's in Bermondsey, if it's the one in Bermondsey, it's actually a mental asylum. They're her words, not mine, might I say.
Yeah.
And she was admitted. Like, oh, this is just, I find this, so she... As Alex said, she was 15. She was admitted with moral insanity.
The way that a lot of women who were just more, you know, unique, individual, free-spirited, like doing what they wanted without worrying about social convention. Like that's, they often got labeled, you know, hysterical, unruly, wild, like, you know, like all these, you know, like all these terrible words. And really all it just meant was that they just wanted to do what they wanted to do. And they just were their own people. And they weren't just following the super, super restrictive customs of the time. And so they got absolutely, like, tragically treated because of it, honestly. I mean, it just...
So she goes to see her sister, and her sister, she thinks it's this girl who looks quite, like, you know, she's having a good time singing and stuff. And then she said, no, that's not your sister. That's your sister. And it's Lily sat in the corner, listless, really just... It's just really sad.
She's just a shell of her former self, basically. Yeah.
But she does finally, once they start talking and stuff, she does recognise her. She says, Mo, where's your ribbon? And she's like, I don't wear a ribbon in my hair anymore. And then they find out, she tells her she's got a niece. And it was just really, really sad. And then she tells her, like, she opens up about the fact that Elizabeth's dad's left her because she could never open up. She's like, you know, the husband's left. Mum always says girls who like it end up in trouble. So she was like, I wanted to, but I just couldn't. So her mum's basically ruined both her lives there by putting one into Larkhill for being morally bankrupt and another one, you know, warning her against it all the time. And then so Maureen basically realizes what she's doing to Elizabeth, and in the end lets her go to the library. So, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, don't you just, I mean, I know I'm belaboring the point, but like, because I do this every single week, but I mean, just imagine the impossible needle it is to thread at this time. You can't enjoy having sex because you're a tart or a slut or whatever it is. You can't not enjoy having sex because then you're going to be considered cold and frigid and your husband is going to leave you. And it's like, there's no way to be a real person in this culture. Like, it's just so restrictive and terrible. And I'm not saying that, like, no woman had, you know, like a happy relationship or a happy life or, you know, a healthy sex life or whatever, but my God, what a hard, just make it so much harder than it already has to be, and like punish people so much for just trying to be a human being. God.
Yeah, I know.
But I still think women are judged by those standards.
Oh, they absolutely are. I mean, it's better for sure than it was, but...
Well, I'm not being funny, but look at Taylor Swift lyrics from Shake It Off. You know, I go to too many dates, I can't make them stay, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that's ridiculous that I'm quoting Taylor Swift lyrics, but it's true.
No, we're still struggling
speaks
with this.
For a
like...
generation, ladies. She well, I mean, for a generation.
It's that, you know, it's that never-ending virgin whore dichotomy that, you know, we all just suffer constantly. You know, like, yeah, be sexual but not too sexual. Be like, you know, the right amount of whatever a man wants. Ugh. I'm just like, oh, break.
You should have been in the Barbie film, Jen.
Love the Barbie film.
That's oh my like... God, I want to be a Barbie so bad.
Shall we talk about... Oh, go on.
I was just going to round it off by saying, but they say that if she wasn't suffering with a mental illness when she went in, she certainly was by the point... Because did we talk about the fact that she was pregnant?
Oh, no. Oh. That's a really good point. Well done.
Oh, geez. Sorry, Bex. Yeah.
So she was pregnant when she went to Lark Hill, and the baby was... She had a boy. The baby was taken off her. And they say that she never got over having to give up her child, which, again, happened to a lot of women around that time.
Mm-hmm. And then that led to true, you know, mental illness that then kept her in Larkhill, which I just was like, oh my God, this is
I'm
so
hoping
sad.
That a relationship with a sister and having, you know, her sister was there getting the soap and stuff for her. She always hated carbolic when she was younger, that kind of stuff. So I really hope that that kind of helps some semblance of normal life, you know, some recovery for her at least.
Do you think she'll get her out of there?
I hope so.
I'm hoping that Maureen and her can have a better relationship, and that what's the girl's name, Elizabeth, the daughter.
Yeah.
That you know, that maybe like if Elizabeth starts to get to know her aunt more, and they all kind of start to have, you know, a good relationship and everything, that then
maybe she can come and live with them.
Yeah, maybe she can kind of come back to life a little bit, and then, you know, just like take two on life, basically just start.
Well,
over.
That's the ending we're creating.
Yeah, that's what I want her to happen. That's what I want to happen.
Right, should we talk about Sister Monica Joan?
Yes.
Packing a bag a week early, full of food. She's got a prize straight there.
Yeah, but she's not wrong to want to do that.
No, she's not. She's not. Did I tell you about when I was giving birth, they tried to give me like an egg mayo sandwich or something. Like it was something full of mayonnaise. I'm allergic to egg, so it would have been the worst thing in the world.
I was going to say, the mayonnaise isn't the worst part of that sandwich.
Yeah, the egg is the real clincher there.
It was egg mayonnaise or something with mayonnaise, but I just remember my husband being like, she's allergic to egg, so. But thank God, it was there. Yeah. Oh. Albie and Maud Valentine, lols, loved them.
Oh my God.
Her children were delivered by Nanartans, and he says that if you don't remember her by her face, you might remember her by her other half.
I just loved them. She was there going ripe as a French figure, ready for slicing. They were just amazing.
And oh, I love what she talked about. Like, basically, she's like, oh, I had 5 or 6 kids. And she's like, and it wasn't even that, you know, like I just had to tell Albie, like, we had to stop because she's like, I couldn't take it anymore. She's like, I was singing to myself while I was making a cup of tea one day and me old insides fell out me knickers. And like, she's like, that was the end of that. And I was like, yes, it is. But I mean, what a nice way to say prolapsed uterus. Like, make it sound almost fun. God.
Oh, I did love her though. She was really sunny. Oh, I'll tell you so what, sweet. SMJ, Sister Monica Joan, was so judgmental when she first was there. She was like, oh, these awful people talking about her incessant chatting.
I feel like I would have been Sister Monica Joan in that situation.
I feel like I would have been Maud Valentine.
Well,
would just want to be not taught to be forced to talk to people, certainly not people just innuendo constantly.
Yeah. See, but I never talk to anyone. I'm whenever I'm in situations like that, I always just keep to myself. But the thing is, I really loved it because I was like, well, now Sister Monica Joan is getting a taste of her own medicine. She gets annoyed by people just doing whatever they want and not respecting, you know, like her boundaries. Well, how does it feel on the other foot, honey? Like, there you go. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, she didn't learn a lesson, did she? Because then they became best friends. So she's just going to carry on like she was.
Well, but that was actually kind of nice because I was like, because she ultimately came, like Maud made her come around, and that was what was nice about it. I actually kind of thought like they bonded like in that dark night of the soul when they both were laying there with the sandbags next to their heads and they had to be basically motionless because of their eyeballs. And they started singing songs and like talking and, you know,
sharing. I like the silliness of how it came about that they started speaking, because Sister Monica mm-hmm. Jones did this really lovely cerebral speech when she was kind of coming to. She was a bit panicky and she was saying this really lovely, like, you know, it'll be okay, you know, it's just think about the everything, like, you know, really trying to soothe her. And then she was like, oh, I'm thinking of custard, lots of custard. And then she was like, so do I, delicious. And then they started talking, it just went really silly really quickly.
Yeah it was really cute.
And I thought it was interesting that it actually made Sister Monica Joan think about the decision she'd made, like, and she says to Sheila, like, you've experienced both sides.
Yeah
but she says, which one's better?
One thing that, what's she called,
Maud.
One thing that Maud did say that I was like, oh, I absolutely feel you in this. She says, and I've not got children, but she says, the kids bring me their troubles and I wear them.
Aww. Well, we've just had a talk today. Well, before this, I've been really emotional because my daughter went to a party and fit out. And I was like, what does fit out mean? And she said, I just didn't fit in. And I've just been really emotional, a wreck since. So yes, same.
Which, by the way, talk about the least not fitting in kid you could ever meet, because she has 8,000 friends. Like, she's the most popular girl in school. Like, she was very just tired. I mean, like,
I dropped her off at the party. There was only like 8 kids or whatever there. And I dropped her off at the party and they all shouted her name and did a big group hug at the door. She did fit in. She was just feeling really tired and emotional.
Yeah. I mean, there's some kids, like, I hate to say it, but like, they just don't fit in really. And like, they do really struggle socially. But Bob's is not one of those kids. But no, she was just having a tough day. Yeah.
But I like the way, the reason that Sister Monica Jo was thinking about, you know, how she joined the religious life or how she didn't get married is because Maud was asking her these questions. They were really getting to know each other. They were soul sisters, some would say.
Yeah.
But I liked it when she was talking about Odysseus was my one true love. And Maud was like, local boy, was he?
My favourite bit was when Sister Winifred came to visit Sister Monica Joan. And she's reading. So Maud has recommended 2 books, Caribbean Kisses or Doctor's Delight. And Sister Winifred is sat reading Caribbean Kisses. When Sheila comes to pack her bag, she comes across the book and Sister Monica Jones says that she can have it, like, that she's happy to donate it for the maternity home. But Sheila says she'll have to skim it first to make sure it's suitable.
And she just like tucks it in her purse. She's like, something for later. Like,
the other thing I really liked was when Sheila was like, oh, no eating. And Mrs. Sister Monica Jane was like, no, no, like a Roman, I have become adept at recumbent dining. I just loved it. And them singing together was just so cute. So cute.
Well, and not to make it more serious, but they talk about getting married, and her and Sister Monica Joan and Maud. And Sister Monica Joan says, you know, like, I wanted a life where I could do what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have to do what anybody else wanted me to do, which basically would be like my husband. And she's like, I wanted a life of adventure and intellect and literature and, you know, all these things. And she's like, this was the perfect like choice for me.
Well, yeah, and marriage would be like a jail to me.
Yeah, a jail. Yeah, which I just was like,
not wrong.
Yeah, and I will say, like, I own the fact that, like, I've been annoyed by Sister Monica Joan with the whole cataract thing and like some of her other health problems and stuff. But I just had this moment when I was watching this week's episode where she was like laying there and she was just, you know, very afraid, and she had the eye patch on her eye and everything. And I thought, especially because, listeners, like, no spoiler, but we're reading Farewell to the East End, the third book in Jennifer Worth's series, and we're going to be doing the book club, you know, episode in a few weeks. And so I've been reading it to get that, you know, done and everything. And in the book, they talk about Sister Monica Joan having been born like in the, you know, like the 1800s, basically. But like, I think in Jennifer Worth's book, she's like 90 when she passes away, and she dies in like the late 1950s, early 1960s. And so she's born in, I want to say, I don't know, 1860s, 1870s, something like that. And so I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching this episode, because I was just like, man, I'm like, if you were born in Sister Monica Joan's time, and even with all the amazing innovations and everything else that she's witnessed in her life, like, having cataract surgery would probably be really scary, you know? Like, how am I going to survive this? Like, how in the world are they going to successfully operate on my eyeball, and I'm not going to be ruined for life, you know? And so I did have a real moment of like genuine understanding and compassion and sympathy for her. And then when she has the bandage off at the end, and they put the eyeglasses on so that she can, you know, finish recovering at home and everything, and she just is like, it's a miracle, I can't believe it, it's a miracle, you know, she's so stunned that she can see better than she could before. My frustration for her, you know, really evaporated, and I was able to kind of just feel so differently and just so happy for her. And like, just, I don't know, I was grateful for that perspective, because I hadn't been giving her a lot of grace prior to that. So,
and I totally get that, because she, through her life, her lifespan, she's seen so much change, but she's a really educated woman, and she works in the profession.
Mm-hmm.
So to some extent, I see that, but to some extent, I think she was just being awkward.
Oh, well, she's just a deeply awkward person.
Yeah, like, she is.
She's like a wild card through and through. So you're never going to get her to be like, quote, normal. But yeah, I mean, she's...
I just really love this storyline. I loved it when they left. Maud was like, I hated calling you sister at first, but you are like a sister to me. Never to be seen or mentioned again, despite having a fruit stall very close to Nanata's house. Literally never to
and
be mentioned again.
Despite the fact that Sister Monica Jane is always on the scrounge for fruit or anything free.
Now she's got someone free. She doesn't even mention her again.
Well, let's just assume that they do see each other a good bit, and we just don't hear about it because it's just not on the show. Just like the Davidsons. Wait, are they called the Davidsons? The Irish family. We don't really see them again, but I mean, we assume Fred's going there every week for the Sporting Life catalog. So
no,
they do leave, don't they?
Well, eventually, but
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's just really quickly skim over the Barbara storyline, which just... she gets ill.
We spoke about it at the start, didn't we? But she's going downhill. She's been admitted to hospital.
Yeah, it's terrible. So like, Tom goes to the welcome party thank you party for the Davidsons, because they're reopening the shop. And Barbara's like, oh, I really don't feel well. He's like, no, that's okay, I didn't expect you to come. He's like, I've actually booked in a nurse to care for you tonight, and it's Phyllis, which is so sweet. And so he goes, and Barbara's just feeling terrible. Phyllis is with her, and Phyllis immediately is like, no, something's, like, this isn't a cold, something's really wrong here.
Dr. Turner.
So she goes to Dr. Turner. Dr. Turner looks at her and is like, oh my God, no, 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 no. So he, so then Phyllis and him call an ambulance. She's already gone by the time Tom comes up. And he sees Dr. Turner and he's like, oh my God, am I needed at the hospital? And he's like, no, Barbara's there. Like, you and I have to go there right now. And he's like, oh my God. So then they run to the car together and then they speed off to the hospital. And that's the end of the episode. But we're all very, very worried about her. And
I just can't even think about it. I don't like it. Let's move on because it's going to be horrible next few weeks. Yes. Shall we do Heroes and Zeros? Because I've got two really good emails to do.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Thought about it. So my hero, I'm just going straight in, it's going to be Phyllis.
Amazing.
Because she ran into a burning building.
Yeah.
My zero is going to be Terry. Because he decided that him and Pearl should have another baby. Now she's got twins. Now she's on her own. He was the one who couldn't wait till he got back from the chip shop to start eating. It wasn't his fault that the van pulled out, but...
But according to Max, it also wasn't not his fault either. Pick a man while he's down, Bex. Gee whiz.
Oh, right. Lord. Who's next? Me or you, Jen?
I'll go, but I think I'm going to take yours. So my zero is going to be the patriarchy. Because it just had terrible effects on so many people in this.
When is the patriarchy ever the hero? I'll carry on.
Well, this week I just was really feeling it. I mean, like, just between Maureen and Lily and Elizabeth and everything, like, my God, I mean, just talk about women whose lives are really so negatively affected by just ridiculous cultural expectations. And I mean, I love the relationship between Sister Monica Joan and Maud, but you kind of just also wonder too, like, what differences or freedoms or opportunities they both would have had if they hadn't had such, like, you know, really, like, stiff expectations put on them. You know, they both lived wonderful lives and everything and did their absolute best, so nothing
or if they just hadn't
there,
had
but...
vaginas.
Well, yeah, gee whiz. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, like, if Sister Monica Joan was a man, like, I mean, my God, like, just anyway. Yeah. But so patriarchy just sucks. And then my hero, I'm gotta give to Barbara because she just steps up every single time. And I just think she's a true hero and she always handles everything with a smile and she digs deep, like, to find the energy. I mean, you know, like, she saved Pearl over and over and over again this episode. And I just think, like, you could just never give Barbara enough credit. So
I love it.
Zero.
Okay. Because I'm last, I'll go my zero first. My zero is Mo and Lily's mum. So much and making them both feel that way for it's just absolutely terrible work there. My hero is Val for being so ardently into those classes, making sure she wants to spread good information around everywhere and not misinformation. So I really appreciated that. I thought she was amazing. And Lucille came round to it in the end as well. So Lucille gets in that as well. So the sex education classes by them are my hero. And yeah, that's the end of it. I've just realised I've done my hero second. So yeah, now I've got some emails, girls.
Ooh.
So the first one is from Jennifer Curran. Hello, Jennifer.
Oh.
Hi, ladies. I'm a huge fan of your show. It's been fun to rewatch it for the millionth time, lol, and then get to hear you guys talk about it. Always fun and funny and nice to hear the different perspectives. And now that I know you, she says that in inverted commas. It's not like she's outside my window right now. It's like she's outside yours, Jen. It's like hanging out with friends. I'm coming to London from America in November with my best friend, and we're going to go do the tour you all mentioned. I cannot wait. I know. I said, I replied, being like, let us know where it is.
Oh, no, wait, in November, but I think it's only goes from March to October.
Double check that, Jennifer Curran, if you're listening.
Yeah.
She says, I cannot wait. I know you've all mentioned maybe covering another show, and I want to recommend Cranford. It's so good. Judy Dench is in it, and Heidi Thomas adapted it.
I have watched Cranford. I do love Cranford, yeah.
There's only like 5 episodes and then a Christmas special, but it would be amazing to hear what you guys think. Thanks so much for the show. Can't wait to hear more. Well, thank you so much for the message, Jennifer. Love that.
You know, it might be nice to actually do like a short show that's like not...
Yeah. Well, also,
seasons.
If it's Heidi Thomas, maybe we could look into other shows Heidi Thomas has kind of been involved in.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this one is entitled, this email is from Lisa, is entitled Boer War.
All right, Lisa, we're ready for it.
Wrap in, ladies. She says, good morning, even though it's evening, but we'll forgive you. I love Call the Midwife and started listening to your podcast when I was laid up with flu over Christmas. I thoroughly enjoy your commentary and friendship. Oh, thank you so much, even though we're absolutely stupid. Listen to this. I am a high school history teacher and recently finished talking about the Boer War in class. I even mentioned your podcast because I was surprised that Becky and Alex didn't know about it from school. You very much didn't. It's a really important part of South African history and part of the reason for apartheid in the 20th century. I'm sure I'm geeking out a bit, but in my rewatching of Call the Midwife many times, I will often pause and do a deep dive into whatever is going on in the episode. I've Google mapped the East End and Poplar, researched tower blocks, understand what and where the commercial road is. I could go on and on. I've just finished your episode on the McAvoys and dysentery, and the treatment of the Irish made me think of the book Caste, The Origins of Our Discontent by Isabel Wilkerson.
I've heard of that book. That's a good book, yeah.
While the book itself is mostly focusing on race relations in the US, she brought up the point that recent immigrants to the US were often the most racist, because by looking down on African Americans, the new arrivals were no longer on the bottom rung of the social hierarchy. This was further reinforced by segregationist policies and attitudes. I think the same was true in Poplar. No matter how bad it was for EastEnders, there was still someone below them, as such these people asserted their perceived superiority by looking down on and insulting the Irish in often very cruel ways. Wow. That's totally right. Like, totally. Thank you for taking the time to read my email. I love your heroes and zeros. Oh, thank you so much for messaging in. That was a really amazing point, and I'm going to look up that book. I'm going to try and read that.
Yeah. I think the book is CASTE, like cast.
Yeah.
That's really, really good. And I will say, love someone who geeks out like she does.
And she should have a podcast.
Oh my
she
god,
would do like res- better than us.
Researching like the tower blocks and all that kind of thing. Oh my god,
that's what we should do. To be fair, I feel like if we weren't doing a podcast and writing notes with stuff like hate her, that kind of thing that I write.
Love that KitchenAid, you know, yeah.
Maybe we would, because when I'm watching films and stuff, I'm always like, oh, where's that? Or who are they married to in real life? Why do I care? But I always look it up and see if they've got kids. What's that about?
Yeah. I know. It definitely, yeah, doing the podcast is definitely a labor of love. But I mean, it's so cool because so many of our listeners really, you know, spend a lot of time on the show besides just watching it. You know what I mean?
That's the best, I do have to say, the best thing about the podcast, apart from getting to speak to you two all the time about it, which is amazing, is because I feel like we speak more now doing the podcast than we would regularly. Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? So that's amazing. But also the interactions we get from like our listeners are amazing. And I just think, I still can't believe, I'll say this all the time, but I still can't believe we actually have people who listen to us who aren't us. I know Becky doesn't listen, but...
to be honest, I'm worried now about Jennifer coming over with a friend.
Well,
in November.
She's got this note. And do you know what? Do you want, Bex? What I'll do is I'll message her now and say, do you want me to do just message her now and make sure she gets that email before this comes out? Because she's got a few weeks left.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm just going to double check. Yeah, it's 1st of March to 31st of October.
Well, I'll tell her.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's good for us to know too, because then that also tells us when we have to have me come over to do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to come when it's not going to.
That's why I was looking at it.
Well, don't worry, I'll message her. Right. Anyway, next week we are doing one of the most horrific episodes coming up.
I don't know if we're going to make
seven.
It.
Episode 7.
Oh, so everybody if you get your tissues ready.
Yeah, if you want to watch along and then listen with us, that'd be fantastic. And in the meantime, subscribe, like, share, whatever. I don't know anymore.
Girls, I've only watched the next episode one time, so
yeah.
Like I'm just very anxious about going back to it.
Yeah, the first time I just wasn't expecting it.
No, same.
Oh, man. Well, I sobbed when Sister Evangelina passed away. And that was one of the most peaceful, like, old lady deaths you could ask for. So.
I know.
Oh, God.
Anyway, should we try and actually finish the episode like we never can?
Yes. All right.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for the emails, by the way. That was amazing. If you do want to get in contact, it is recallthemidwife@gmail.com. And also message on all social media platforms. You can do that as well. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.